But also joining us in the window is Rick Nolan from the Medina Gazette, covers the Cavaliers. And so you've kind of had a little bit of a busy time recently. And where is your phone? Don't you sports guys like check your phone? Isn't that where all the sports world gets their information?
I actually left it in the car when I walked in here today because I was afraid it might go off while we were talking.
Okay. See, well, you know how that happens.
10 minutes, I'm starting to shake a little bit.
I guess so. Well, that's because that's where everything breaks that way now. Doesn't it seem that way?
Yeah. Actually, ironically, during the whole LeBron thing, I was on 2 weeks vacation going into that. I was supposed to return to work on Monday. But when the LeBron announcement became official on Friday, I got justifiably nudged into cutting vacation a day early and coming in and writing a column on that day. So it was a little warm-up for getting back to work yesterday, and now we're back to full business as usual.
Well, from what I was listening and hearing, you weren't the only sports person that probably was taking the July vacation. The timing didn't always work out as well.
With sports today, a lot of the seasons, especially with the Browns, not so much with the Cavs, but pretty decently, it's become almost a 12-month-a-year season. There's not a whole lot of downtime to take a vacation, especially at a smaller paper that doesn't have a real big staff. So you got to get it when you can. So unfortunately, I had to take it during one of the busiest times of the year with free agency going on. But you know, you got to do it when you can because something else is always happening the next day.
It used to be the All-Star break was kind of like that slow time, like right now.
Yeah, but who wants to take a vacation in February in Ohio?
You know, so. Oh, that's true.
Let's talk a little bit about LeBron. Were you surprised that he signed with the Cavaliers?
Well, in the weeks leading up to it, not so much. If you'd asked me the same question, you know, with 2 months ago in the regular season, I'd have put the chances at probably 10% or less. But, you know, the Cavs did a good job of acquiring some young talent. They did a real good job of, I don't mean this in a horrible way, but of basically doing nothing as far as their salary cap status was concerned. Then they had a 1.7% chance of getting the number one pick in the draft come to fruition and were able to draft Andrew Wiggins. At the same time, you know, it looked like Miami was going to three-peat and win its third straight title, but then all of a sudden in San Antonio, some glaring weaknesses surfaced, and suddenly what looked like the best team in the league suddenly looked like an aging one with a thin roster and a team that didn't have a whole lot of salary cap maneuverability to add new pieces. So all those things kind of conspired into a perfect storm for the Cavs, and as that San Antonio series progressed and then when it ended, I got the feeling that LeBron, you know, was a smart enough guy to realize that the talent he has in Cleveland, you know, in a year and in 2 years and especially in 3 years is going to be actually a lot better than what Miami was going to be able to put together. And Cleveland had the money to give it. And then, you know, the great factor that he grew up in Akron, you know, swayed things completely in Cleveland's favor, and it all worked out for the Cavs.
There is a lot of speculation, maybe it's more than speculation, about Kevin Love possibly, the Cavs possibly pursuing him. What's the latest on that?
Well, I mean, I think it's the same as it's been for the last several days. The Cavs would love to have him. He's gone on record with some national reporters as saying that if, you know, prior to LeBron signing here, he had said if LeBron signed with the Cavs, he'd be willing, perfectly willing, to sign a contract extension in Cleveland. The Cavs would love to have him. I think he's a perfect fit. He's a guy who rebounds like a madman. He knows how to pass the ball, and he's a lights-out shooter from behind the three-point arc. The holdup is that the Minnesota wants Andrew Wiggins, who they took with the number one pick in a trade, and the Cavs have to this point steadfastly refused to part with him. So right now, it's a game of chicken a little bit, and to see who will blink. Now. Minnesota pretty much has been told that he's not coming back after the 2014-15 season. The Cavs, though, have to consider that there's 28 other teams in the league that could possibly make a move to get him. So, you know, you hedge your bets and you try to do what's best for your team long term, but at some point, you know, they may have to take a gamble and sweeten the pot. I would love to have him as a fan, as a sports writer. I would do my absolute best to not give Andrew Wiggins to get him, but if they don't budge and we're getting towards the trading deadline, then I think you may have to sweeten the pot. But that stuff tends to all play itself out over time. So right now I think it's two teams sticking to their guns, and we'll see which one blinks first.
Even beyond Kevin Love, it appears the Cavaliers still have a few holes to fill. How do you think they'll go about that?
Well, they're a little shy on big men now. They traded Tyler Zeller to create some cap space. they have an aging Brendan Haywood. I didn't really think he was going to be a part of the team at all when the trade was initially made on draft night. But now it looks like he may have to fill in and give him some minutes. You know, Andy's a very, very, very good player when Andy is healthy. Unfortunately, he hasn't always been healthy over the last 3 or 4 years. So that's one area of concern, and they're always looking to add shooting. They've talked with Ray Allen. They've talked with Mike Miller, who are both former LeBron teammates in Miami. It looks like Ray Allen is leaning toward retiring. A couple other teams have entered the fray for Mike Miller, but they're looking for guys. You know, they have two great creators, three if you count Deion, Kyrie, and LeBron, who can get open shots for guys. Now they just need a guy who can step out from distance and knock those down. So I think that's probably the number one priority, and then with big men being right behind that.
We're talking with Rick Nolan from the Medina Gazette. What do you think of the new coach? What are your impressions so far?
I have met him one time at his introductory press conference. There's no question in my mind that he knows the game and he knows the X's and O's. I think the acquisition of LeBron as kind of a mentor in the locker room to these guys will help immensely. The players they have had the last few years, they're decent guys and they say the right things, but they really don't understand, completely understand at least, what it takes to win at the NBA level. And I think that is where LeBron can kind of be a go-between between David Blatt and the players. David Blatt is a bit of a disciplinarian. He can get loud. He can yell. NBA players don't always respond to that. But if LeBron's buying into it, then I think it makes it easier for the younger guys, the Kyries, the Deons, the Tristan Thompsons, to see that, hey, if a four-time MVP is listening to this guy, then maybe he knows what he's talking about, and we should too.
We had heard last season about some possible friction in the locker room on the Cavaliers roster. Was any of that accurate? Any of that on the money?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's friction in every locker room. When you've won, you know, 19 games 1 year, 21 the next, 24 the year after, and 33 last season, I wouldn't want my players to be completely happy with what was going on. You know, there were some issues. A few players didn't completely get along. There's a little bit of tension, but I think it's something that they've worked past, and I don't see it being an issue going forward.
We've also been told that you're working on a book. Let's hear about it.
Well, I've been at the Gazette since December of 1983, so we're coming up on 31 years.
It's a Gazette tell-all book.
Oh, really? Tell-all.
You know, I've done some quick math in my head, and I've probably written 8,000 and 9,000 stories while I've been at the Gazette. This book is a compilation of, like, right now I have 49 stories that I've nailed as the ones that stand out to me. It's a local book for local people. There are stories in there about the drive, the fumble, the shot, the decision, what I guess we're going to call the return with LeBron James now. But by and large, they're local stories about local people. Most of them who have overcome tremendous obstacles to succeed in life, be it health problems or whatnot. And it's coming along fantastically well. I'm self-publishing it through the Worcester Book Company. It's costing me a few dollars, but I've gotten tremendous feedback on it so far. And it's broken into six sections, and I have it. I have five of the six sections completely done. So there's a little bit of work left. We got some issues to work out as far as the cover. I found the photo for that. I pretty much settled on the title is going to be Overtime, playing on overtime in basketball, and overtime meaning the story's over 30 plus years. So I actually wish I had done it, you know, a few years earlier, and maybe I'd have had time to do another one before I finally call it quits. But it's been a tremendous joy to do to this point.
Are those type of the stories the ones that really kind of feed you as a writer?
Yeah, I mean, if I could pick my perfect job, it would be to just go out and find stories, the bigger stories, the people who have overcome a stroke or a heart attack or some type of physical ailment to excel in sports or coaching, and really get to know the person, sit down with their family, spend, you know, more than an hour or two doing the story. But, you know, to be able to do something really long and special and in-depth is really what I enjoy doing.
Did you have a moment where you came upon one of these older stories and go, oh, yeah, I wrote that way back when?
Yeah, you know, when I first decided doing this, there was, 10 or 15 stories that immediately jumped to mind that stories that had to be in the book. One was on the death of my mother in 1989, who died when the Bad Boy Detroit Pistons won their first NBA title. And I wrote a column a few days after her death about what it was like to watch that game on the night she died. So that's probably the favorite story I've done. There's also one on my dad passing away in 2001. And drinking the last Platts that was in the refrigerator when he passed away. Those are two that stand out. There's a number on local people. A young man named Richard Jackson, who played basketball at Black River High School, was the only African American in his senior class, but he was the youngest of 96 grandchildren. His grandmother had 21 children, so it was about tying those two worlds together. Those are stories that really stand out to me.
On a story like that, how is it that you discover those details? Well, how many questions do you get to before you sort of unlock the story?
You know, that's one of the great things about working in a smaller newspaper in a town like Medina, where everything is kind of together. You get to know people, and they tell you things, and you store them away, and you just ask a few questions. And in this instance, the one with Richard Jackson, I noticed when he was playing that there were no other African Americans in the stands at Black or some. I inquired, how many African Americans are in his class, and I was told none. So I asked a couple more questions, and I had actually worked out with his older cousin at a local gym for several years prior to that, and he started telling me the family background. And you know, when you're a reporter and you hear things like that, your ears perk up, and I'm like, hey, I think there's something here. So the next thing you do is, you sit down with the family and you tell them the idea you have, and you see how they feel about it. And, I'd say 95% of the time, people are more than willing to share their story and to tell you a lot of private things.
As long as it's done in respect.
Correct.
And that you have a little bit
Correct.
Of an interesting story to it. You mentioned you were on vacation before. Obviously, you're never on vacation if you're a reporter. Your ears are always working.
Yes.
And listening for something to store away for future use.
Yeah, whenever they get on me about maybe cutting a day a tiny bit short, I'm like, yeah, but when I'm watching SportsCenter while I'm having a beer at the local bar, I'm still technically on the clock because I'm doing research.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. When did we expect to see this the book out?
I don't have a definitive timetable. When I started the project about 3 months ago, I envisioned it was going to take me upwards of a year to complete. Some writers keep everything they ever write. I immediately throw everything I write into the trash can. So I started from ground zero on this, and it required a lot of research, first in my own head to come up with stories I wanted to include, and then locating what days they had actually been published. Facebook was a tremendous help because there were a number of stories that I was able to come within a year or so of when they ran, but it takes a lot of time to go to the local library and look through a year's worth of microfilm. So I was able to contact a number of the people that were the subjects of the story. Fortunately, they thought enough of it. They still had a copy, 20 or 25 or sometimes even 30 years later, and were able to provide me with a date so then I could go to a specific microfilm dish. The other factor was the Gazette library system, where we keep stories on. Due to system changes and computer system alterations over the years, only goes back to 1993. So anything written prior to that, I had to go to the library or find an actual copy of, because we did not have it on our system. So I located the stories much quicker than I thought. To answer your initial question, I don't have a timetable for when it's going to be done. I'm trying to make it continue to be fun for me and not something I dread doing because of
the deadline. Can really change.
I have enough of those during my regular job that this is something I do, when I have a moment or two. I did a lot of it on vacation. My initial goal was, maybe March of April of next year, but now things are coming along so well and moving so smoothly. I'm thinking maybe it might be done by October or November. So when it's done, it's done.
So instead of like overtime, it's more like a baseball game.
Yeah, it'll extra over, inning. We could go into extra innings.
Over when it's over.
That's a possible title just popped in my head. Extra innings, except the photos of me on a football field. So that could confuse people.
That's great. Well, Rick Nolan, we appreciate you coming in this morning. I know for a newspaper reporter, sometimes early at morning hours are the time where they're recharging their batteries, ready for the evening when all the sports takes place. You can read them in the Medina Gazette. Rick, thanks for stopping in.
Thank you so much.